From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and happy Friday to you. Welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heise, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and your Friday host, and we're glad to have you on board. By the way, Tony is in Israel right about now. He'll be there for the next week or so, and each day next week, he is going to be offering prayers from different places in Israel. If you would like to join him and participate in that time of prayer, you can do so by texting the word Israel to 67742, and by doing so, you'll be able to get all the information you need to connect with him while he's there in Israel. All right, let's give some of the highlights of where we're going today. As you well know, last night, President Biden delivered his fourth State of the Union address. It was an angry speech that offered the nation perhaps the longest campaign-like appearance that they're likely to see from the 81-year-old incumbent president. At least between now and November, I would imagine that's the longest campaign speech you're going to hear. And really, that's what it was. Now, let's go back 4 years ago. You may recall when President Biden came into office, he pledged to America to restore unity and to mend our nation. That was a message not only that he repeated over and over, but it was echoed by the big headline media outlets across the country. But last night's State of the Union address functioned so much more as an angry campaign speech, literally attacking everyone from pro-life Americans to Israel to even the justices on the U.S. Supreme Court.
Stop denying another core value of America, our diversity across American life. Banning books, it's wrong. Instead of erasing history, let's make history. I want to protect fundamental rights. Pass the Equality Act.
Wow, I tell you, as a former member of Congress, I have personally witnessed many State of the Union addresses, and last night's spectacle was unlike any that I have ever seen. Now, I'll be talking here in just a few moments with Michigan Congressman Tim Walberg and get his reactions to the State of the Union address. And you're probably not surprised to hear me say that not everything that the president shouted last night, and he did a lot of shouting, but not everything he shouted last night was even accurate. In fact, there was quite a lot in the speech that was far from accurate. Well, Washington Stan's Ben Johnson actually has an article that he put out this morning separating the truth from the lies in last night's address. And he'll be joining me a little bit later to break down that information for us, so you'll want to be sure to hear that. And one thing that the president absolutely made clear last night, 2024, he is going to be running for re-election on the platform of abortion all the way until birth.
If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
Wow. So there's a lot to break down even in that statement. But let me tell you, pro-life Christians cannot say that they were not warned of what the president aims to do for his second term. FRC's Mary Zock will be joining me a little bit later to discuss that aspect of the speech. And as he's done before, President Biden wrapped up his tirade with the remark that we're in the battle for the soul of our nation.
I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America to the future.
Well, we definitely are in a battle for the soul of our country. But it's not quite the way the president would describe it. FRC's David Clawson will be joining me a little bit later for a worldview segment as it relates to this entire battle. So we've got a lot lined up for you tonight, zeroing in on the State of the Union address, breaking it down for you, giving everything you need. And let me just remind you, the website, of course, is TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources available there for you, including notes on today's program, as well as archives of previous programs. So be sure to check out that website, TonyPerkins.com. And I'm sure I'll be probably mentioning this a little bit later in the program as well, but we are putting forth a petition to go to Politico demanding an apology for their slander of spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives. You saw it last week, and we've reported about it. I'll probably talk a little bit more, as I said, later. But you can join the petition. We urge you to do so by simply texting the word Politico to 67742. That's Politico, P-O-L-I-T-I-C-O, to 67742. All right, let's get on to today's program. President Biden opened his State of the Union address last night with the statement that history is watching. He even got to that point before moving on to other extreme positions that he and the left share, things like transgender ideology and a continuation of his open border policy and killing of the unborn and so forth. The president's advisors clearly saw that last night was going to be their best opportunity to calm the increasing concern that the left has over the president's age and his poor approval ratings. So this really turned into a campaign speech. But what happened to his promise from 4 years ago to bring unity to our country? Well, joining me now to discuss this and to give his reaction to last night's address is Congressman Tim Walberg. He serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee as well as the Committee on Education and Workforce. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Michigan. Congressman Walberg, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you, my friend.
Jody, it's always great to see you, and we miss you there on the floors of Congress and your voice that was always so strong.
Well, thank you so much, Tim. I appreciate that and miss you as well and so many of the colleagues. Well, I tell you, I would love to have been on the floor. Well, I say that. I was glad to be observing from elsewhere to some extent. I tell you, I've never seen a State of the Union address like that. You, likewise, you've been in public service for many years. You've been through many of these State of the Union addresses. Give me your overall 30,000-foot view of what you saw last night.
Well, after 16 of these live State of the Union addresses that I've had the privilege to sit on the floor, and I say privilege because how can you not say it's a privilege to be a member of Congress, of the greatest country on the face of the earth, blessed by God in so many ways to the point that we're able to give away his blessing. And I'm fearful of that. We walked off the floor last night, a number of us conservatives, just shocked, almost silent. We had never heard anything like this before. You know, I was there for Bush, for Obama, for Trump, and now for Biden. And having sat at his inauguration a little over 3 years ago, where he said, I'm going to be the great uniter in this country. That wasn't a uniter last night. It was a destroyer of the foundations of this great country. He spoke to every issue that would destroy the traditional values, the principles upon which this country was founded and which God has blessed. And so to hear what went on last night, it was unbelievable. I mean, he came out angry. He came out breaking protocol, didn't even give our Speaker of the House the opportunity to introduce him, just launched into a speech. And it was angry from that point on. I thought to myself, I remember days when on my way to grammar school, and I would cut across at a corner lot in the south side of Chicago, and the homeowner would be on his porch hollering at us to get off his lawn. That's how it felt last night from this president, who was there to allegedly show his strength, but I think he showed his anger and his lack of understanding about the greatness of this country. And for all political purposes, he launched into a campaign speech that said, Republicans, we don't want you. I think he said, independents, we don't expect you to support us either. we're going to our radical left, hoping that they'll support us as well. I think he failed last night, and I think he gave us a concern about the security, the health, the freedom of our country in all different ways last night.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Congressman. In fact, that's why I wanted you on. I wanted someone who has been there, who has been through several different administrations. And I remember there, even with Obama, he gave parts of his State of the Union address that everyone would stand up and cheer. There were certain things that everyone agrees upon as America. There was none of that last night. In fact, from my recollection, the only time the Republicans stood up and applauded was in honor of a civil rights activist from 59 years previous, and it was just a matter of respect given to her. But the president came in, he talked about, like you said, very angry, but talked about things like threats to democracy. Does he really expect the American people, coming from a party that is doing everything they can to keep the leader off ballot, that they somehow are to be entrusted with democracy and that they themselves are not a threat to it?
Absolutely not, if they would be honest about that. But they're hoping to snow us. Last night with what he talked about, I mean, I don't think anybody that's been keeping up with life, not even necessarily listening to the news and the commentators, but just life, going to the gas station, going to the grocery store, looking at their cost of living increase for Social Security and Medicare. My UAW workers in Michigan, who got a massive raise as a result of a strike that went on, and have seen much of that raise eaten up because of inflation. At a senior forum this past week that I had in my district, what they wanted to talk about was the fact that they're not surviving with their Medicare and Social Security because it's being eaten up with inflation. And so the president last night, who was talking about successes, I think most people, if they listened to that, they said, wait a second, if that's what's happening, why am I not receiving that same benefit? I think the only thing we could agree with, I almost stood up last night when he said, you know, we're paying more for our potato chips, our snacks, and our Snickers bars, and we're getting less. And I had to say to myself, yeah, I agree with him, but that's his inflation problem because of what he's done. It's forced Hershey and Mars to put less candy in the wrapper for us to experience. So no, it was unbelievable. And then to say that crime is down in this country, you tell that to the residents of Chicago, you tell that to the residents of San Francisco, you tell that to the residents of Washington, D.C., even my colleagues, several of them who have been assaulted on the streets. One has had his car hijacked. We've had a good friend, a former member of the Trump team, who was shot to death after carjacking in his car in Washington, D.C. You tell that to them,
Congressman.
So this was crazy.
We're going to have to leave it there. Congressman Tim Walbert, always great to have you on the program. Thank you so much. And I could not agree with you more on your assessment of the State of the Union address. Thank you for your leadership and thank you for joining us. All right, friends, stay tuned. Although there were a lot of whoppers told last night, we're going to break it down and give it to you straight up. What was truth and what was not. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, I'm Jody Heiss, your Friday host, and we are honored to have you on board with us as we discuss the State of the Union address last night. As you may have heard by now, it only lasted about 68 minutes. But during that 68 minutes, the president managed somehow to pack in more than just a few false assertions, some dubious statements, and frankly, some outright lies, which appeared, quite frankly, to be aimed at a campaign rally more than the history books. Well, joining me now to discuss all of this is Washington Stand senior reporter and editor Ben Johnson. Ben wrote a column today that literally fact-checks last night's address, and he joins me now to break all of that down for us. Ben, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Good to be with you, Congressman.
All right, so let's break this all down. There were so many false statements that came forth last night, and frankly, we're going to have to work rather quickly to get through as many as we can. Let's begin with the phantom ban on IVF that the president mentioned. Play clip four, please.
The Alabama Supreme Court shut down IVF treatments across the state, unleashed by a Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. She was told her dream would have to wait. What her family had got through should never have happened. Unless Congress acts, it could happen again. So tonight, let's stand up for families like hers. To my friends across the aisle, don't keep this waiting any longer. Guarantee the right to IVF. Guarantee it nationwide.
Well, all right, let's start with that one. Your reaction.
Yeah, the Alabama Supreme Court case that he's talking about had nothing to do with banning IVF. It was a civil case. In this case, there was a family that had produced some children and stored them in an IVF clinic in Alabama. Unfortunately, those children had been killed without their desire, and they wanted to know if they could sue for damages under the state's 1872 Wrongful Death of a Minor Act. The Alabama Supreme Court ruled that they could because they are children, but it had nothing to do with any criminal law trying to ban IVF. There was no such law. He made it up.
Yeah, it's just fear-mongering. And along that same general pathway, there were a number of whoppers, quite frankly, regarding abortion and the sanctity of life. I will be unpacking that a little bit further on in the program. But give us some of the highlights that dealt with the issue of life.
Oh, sure. One of the things that President Biden said was if he is reelected and he has a Congress that is amenable to it, then he will, quote-unquote, restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land. Not that it was ever passed as a law. Of course, this was a Supreme Court decision. But the bill that Biden endorsed to do that goes way beyond Roe. The law in question is the so-called Women's Health Protection Act, the WHPA. And one of the ways you know that it goes beyond Roe is it would strike down 1,381 state pro-life laws that the American people put on the books while Roe was still active. So this obviously goes far beyond what Roe v. Wade had envisioned. That includes many pro-life protections after a child is viable, parental consent laws, parental notification laws, and many others. He also mentioned Kate Cox, who was in the gallery. Kate Cox, of course, had a heartbreaking story about her child being diagnosed in the womb with trisomy 18, and she wanted to get an abortion. But one of the things that he said that went even beyond the tragedy of that story, he said that her doctor had told Kate that her own life was at risk if she didn't act. Well, Cox's physician, Dr. Carson, had never certified that. That was actually what was at the heart of the Texas Supreme Court case. Texas abortion law allows a woman to have an abortion if her life is endangered by the pregnancy. However, she could never certify that. Her doctor, again, Dr. Carson, never certified that, so she ended up ultimately going to another state. So it never that never came about. One of the biggest flaws, myths, and what I thought was one of the most heartbreaking misstatements that the president made, he said that there are state laws banning the freedom to choose, as he calls it. And he says they force survivors of rape and incest to leave the states to get the treatment they need. Abortion is not a treatment because a baby is not a disease. I was particularly heartbroken that our mutual friend, Ryan Bomberger, who I know has been on this program many times, a man who was conceived in rape, was in the gallery when that came about. Again, he was conceived in rape. He speaks out for the personhood of the people who are conceived in that way and says, we should not be treated in this manner. We are equally valuable with every other member of the human race. I'm sorry that the president diminished that. Finally, he said that President Donald Trump supports a national abortion ban. In fact, President Trump has not endorsed any particular bill, although he has said that he kind of likes 15 weeks. He has not officially endorsed that bill.
Yeah, those are fantastic points that you bring up, just outright misstatements all the way around. Part of it, too, the focus, a lot of the focus today has been on Lake and Riley and the president's comments on illegal immigration. In addition to getting Lincoln's name wrong, he referred to her as Lincoln. But in addition to that, he also made this remark that I'd like to get your reaction. Clip 12, please.
Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Wow. It's like, let's justify crime. Your reaction to that one?
Well, and I'm glad that you highlighted this, because this is something even a lot of people on our side of the aisle are getting wrong. A lot of people are saying, well, the president admitted that thousands of people are being killed by illegals. If you read the transcript and if you have a closed caption on your television or you listen closely, he says, how many thousands are being killed by illegals? That is, people who are in this country legally. What he is doing, he's making this kind of an oblique reference. There was a study put out by the Cato Institution, Alex Narashta, who said that illegal immigrants are less likely to commit violent crime than American citizens. That's highly contested by our friends at the Center for Immigration Studies, like Mark Krikorian, who was on this program earlier this week. They say that they got the data wrong. But essentially what Joe Biden is saying is, yes, she was killed by an illegal alien, but that doesn't matter. They're better than you are. And it doesn't matter if they're less likely as a percentage of people to commit violent crime or not. Ultimately, it does not matter. The fact is, they should not be in this country. And if the Venezuelan illegal immigrant who killed her was not here, she would be alive today.
Ben Johnson, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to break down so much of the misstatements that the president mentioned last night. I mean, and there are more. We only touched a handful of them. But there's no doubt the president's going to be running on abortion, and he is going to be saying that democracy is in serious trouble unless he prevails. It's incredible what's taking place. Ben Johnson, I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, friends, we know, look, at the end of the day, we know that salvation only comes through our Lord Jesus Christ. He created us, fashioned us. He sanctified the human soul. It's all about him, and we're going to keep that focus. Our salvation does not come by government, but by Christ. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you with us today. By the way, Tony is on his way to Israel. He will be in Israel next week and will be hosting Washington Watch a couple of times next week from Israel. So you want to be sure to be praying for him, but also to tune in next week as he brings at least a couple of the programs from Israel, and I'll be filling in the rest of the week. Let's get back to the State of the Union address. Among the many realities that were made clear last night by the president is that the president himself and the Democrats as a whole are all in when it comes to running on abortion in 2024. In fact, one of the sad moments last night in the speech to me was the cheering, the celebration that the Democrats were having over the killing of babies. It was just, I was shocked watching how they were cheering as the president was talking about their commitment to abortion. Look, killing babies has certainly become a primary part of the Democrats' agenda in this upcoming election. And so none of us can say that we don't recognize just how high the stakes are in this upcoming election. Well, joining me now to discuss how last night's State of the Union address demonstrated the president's commitment to abortion is Mary Zog, the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. Mary, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jody.
All right. I thought this was a pretty brutal reality that came through loud and clear last night. The president absolutely did not hide at all how important abortion is going to be to his re-election campaign. Let me get your thoughts on that.
He certainly didn't. And what President Biden is trying to do is to enshrine abortion on demand, the killing of an unborn child on demand through 9 months of pregnancy into American law. And he is trying to overwrite state laws that are protecting unborn children that have been put into place by legislators. Now, we know that people shouldn't be voting on who lives and who is able to be killed legally. But what President Biden is trying to do, what he's supporting, is killing an unborn child. He said, what else would you take away? Well, President Biden, you're trying to take away an unborn child's life, a sweet little baby's life. That's a question that Americans should be asking themselves right now. What is President Biden actually trying to do here?
Yeah, if you take away a life, what else is there to take away? I mean, this is just the absurdity of it all. And yet he claimed that Republicans are the radical ones in all of this. In fact, he spent a lot of time last night yelling throughout his speech, but he yelled about codifying Roe v. Wade. In fact, I'd like to play clip 5 here and get your reaction to this.
Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. My God, what freedom else would you take away? If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
All right. Again, Roe v. Wade was not the law of the land. Let's get that straight. But give me your reaction to this, and what legislation is he actually referring to?
He's referring to legislation that would put us on par with human rights violators like North Korea and China that allow a child to be killed minutes before they're born. Seconds before that child's born. And we know for a fact that this does happen, that there's evidence pointing to this happening just blocks from the White House at Cesare Santangelo's abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. So what is what is extreme? It is taking a human being's life. That's what he's taking.
Well, the First Lady brought, and I'm sure most everyone who watched saw that, for those who obviously didn't see the program, need to know that the First Lady had with her a guest, a woman who recently obtained an abortion out of state after learning that her preborn child had evidently some serious fetal anomalies. But you have studied the compassionate option of perinatal hospice for pregnant women who had some sort of adverse prenatal diagnosis. I found your study to be fascinating. What did you find in that?
Well, for a second, Jody, if I could, I'd like to talk about the having Kate Cox there. And notably, seated next to Kate Cox was Maria Shriver. Now, Maria Shriver's mom was Eunice Kennedy Shriver, and her dad was Sergeant Shriver. They were Democrats at a time when Democrats weren't afraid to stand up for life, when being a Democrat didn't mean that you supported killing an unborn child up until the moment of birth. And Maria Shriver's mom founded the Special Olympics organization. And she was a huge advocate for people with disabilities, including those in the womb. And she saw the attack of abortion as an attack that would lead to eugenics. And that's exactly what we're seeing Democrats using as their lead today in their argument for abortion, that they want to have abortion throughout pregnancy so that a person who has found that their child has a poor prenatal diagnosis can be aborted up until the moment of birth. In our study, we found that when these women are supported, they are overwhelmingly confident in their decision to carry their child to term. Over 85% said that they were very confident in that decision. And that's a really beautiful thing, that all these women need is a little bit of support. We found too that these women were overwhelmingly told to abort their child. And that's a tragedy.
It really is a tragedy. Well, Mary, listen, can you hold over over the break? I've got a couple more questions I'd like to bring your way. Can you hang on for a few minutes?
I'd love to.
Okay. All right, friends, stay tuned. We've got more with Mary and more discussion on the President's State of the Union address coming your way. Dissecting it all for you. Stay tuned. Much more coming your way right after the break.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you joining us today. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss, and we are dissecting the State of the Union address, all the important issues that you need to be aware of. Joining me now is Mary Zock, the director of the Center for Human Dignity here at the Family Research Council. Mary, thank you so much for holding over on the break. I wanted to get your reaction to a clip we actually showed a little bit earlier in the program, but I'd like to get your reaction to this. And it basically comes down to President Biden continuing to echo a false narrative regarding the Alabama Supreme Court ruling last month. So if we can, let's play clip four, and I'd like to get your reaction.
The Alabama Supreme Court shut down IVF treatments across the state, unleashed by a Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade. She was told her dream would have to wait. What her family had got through should never have happened. Unless Congress acts, it could happen again. So tonight, let's stand up for families like hers. To my friends across the aisle, don't keep this waiting any longer. Guarantee the right to ABF. Guarantee it nationwide.
All right, there's a lot of issues in what the president just said, but give me your reaction.
Well, first off, he's wrong. The Alabama Supreme Court did not shut down IVF clinics across the state. In fact, the Alabama Supreme Court case was brought by a couple who pursued IVF, it wasn't some zealously anti-IVF group who brought this. It was a couple who had used IVF, and this couple was heartbroken because three of their unborn children, three of their embryos were destroyed because the IVF clinic was so reckless that a random patient was able to walk in there and smash these embryos. But we know that you can't even walk into a CVS and ask for a razor without someone from the front desk coming and needing to unlock the cabinet where it is. Yet in this clinic, a random person was able to smash these embryos. What the Alabama Supreme Court ruled was that an unborn child is a person regardless of their location. And this is actually a really good ruling for all of us, because it means that the government can't just decide that where we are or what our state in life is determines whether or not we have the right of being a person. And that's a really good lesson for all of us.
It certainly is. Well, Mary, a final question here for you real quickly. There's no doubt this issue, the life issue, the abortion issue, the death issue, is going to be a major primary agenda item for the Democrats. How then should the pro-life movement as a whole respond between now and November as this election comes before us? Given what all was said last night and given the fact that the stakes on this issue are extremely high, how should we respond?
Well, I think first we always need to listen to hear what the other side is saying. If they're saying that a woman can't achieve success in her career if she's pregnant, or a woman can't get out of poverty if she's pregnant, we need to say, well, let's address the actual problem in this issue. And the problem here is not a child. The problem is that we need to create an environment where women can succeed while being mothers. We need to speak with love and compassion about the issue of abortion, and we need to do so in specifics. We need to tell the stories of the men and women who are alive today who have survived abortion attempts on their life that prove that abortion tries to take the life of an unborn child. And we need to always say what we're for. We're for defending a human being's life. And that's a beautiful thing to stand for.
Yeah, great point. This is all a battle for life, and we are standing for the life of babies. Mary Zock, always great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your expertise and for breaking down what was said last night and how we need to respond to it. We appreciate it so much. We want to continue this discussion. I'm going to bring in David Clawson. He's the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview. Before I switch to him, though, just real quickly, I want to give you a to-do item. And this comes really just by way of reminder, I suppose. Recently, Politico, a national investigator, correspondent Heidi Prisbola, Tony, in fact, dealt with this again yesterday. We've all been dealing with, but she made the audacious claim that anyone who believes that our rights are derived from God is a Christian nationalist. And folks, her comments were not an accident. In fact, this is a long-running pattern of the legacy media. They openly display disdain for Christians. And FRC right now, we're organizing a petition to go to Politico demanding an apology. And we're going to ask you to help us sign the petition. We will deliver it. If you'll go to frc.org/politico, that's frc.org/politico, you can sign the petition, or you can simply text the word Politico, that's P-O-L-I-T-I-C-O, Politico, to 67742. So help us out, sign the petition, and we will deliver it demanding an apology. All right, now continuing the discussion on last night's State of the Union address, friends, I can tell you, as a member of Congress, I have been to many of these State of the Union addresses, and last night to me, as I watched it, was unlike any State of the Union address I have ever witnessed. Always, just as an example, whoever is speaking throws a bone, if you will, throws to the opposite side of whichever party is there. But there are certain issues in a state of a union that pull everybody together, things that both sides of the aisle stand up and applaud, things that all of Americans believe in, that we trust in, that we adhere to, that we all agree with. It's like that with all State of the Union addresses. It was not like that last night. Last night was full of anger. I literally watched while I was taking notes. I wrote down literally, this seems like hate speech. It was like I was listening to the Hate of the Union address rather than the State of the Union. It was demeaning. It was attacking Republicans. It was attacking all conservatives. It was the Democratic side or nothing at all. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen last night. And it demonstrated just how far the president has fallen short of his own claims and promises to work to unite the country. That was the most divisive speech I've heard in a State of the Union ever. And yet the president said he was going to be the president of all. He was going to unite the country. So how should we view the address through the lens of Scripture? Well, joining me now to discuss this from a worldview perspective is David Clawson. He, of course, is the director of the Center for Biblical Worldview here at FRC. David, welcome back to the program. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Great to be with you, Jody.
All right. So given all the talk of his age, the president was clearly last night trying to convey vigor and energy. But what came across, at least to me, was anger. Give me your thoughts on both the tone of the president's address and the reaction that it was intended to provoke.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jody. I actually watched a couple hours of, airtime and coverage prior to the State of the Union on CNN and other networks. And it was really incredible to me to see how kind of low the bar was set. And even Republicans, I think, fed into that. Just that, as long as Joe Biden didn't get up there and fall over, I think people were going to say it was a success. And so from that, if that's your metric, I think, sure, it was a fine time. But what really struck out to me was how angry and loud and partisan he came across. I've been watching State of Unions my whole life. And the thought that came to me, Jody, is, the folks who are going to write his speech at the Democrat National Convention really can take the summer off, because all he has to really do is give that same speech again, because it was so partisan. It was just overtly going through a checklist of the things on the Democrat Party's wish list. But specifically from a worldview perspective, that was helpful, Jody, was the priorities of this president. And I found it interesting that before he even, got to the issue of immigration and the border, which is on everyone's mind, he talked about every issue under the sun, including Snicker bars, until he even got to the issue that voters tell us is the number one issue on their minds. Those are just a couple of things that stood out to me.
Yeah, great point. In fact, the whole speech started with the need for us to continue crazy support, outlandish continued support for Ukraine. And many of us were sitting there thinking, what about defending our own border? What about securing our own national security? And yet out of the gate, we're talking about we've got to defend the national security of Ukraine. But the president also addressed gender ideology. Yeah. He spoke directly about the Equality Act when talking about his desire to protect fundamental rights. You've written a lot about the Equality Act. Does the Equality Act in and of itself protect fundamental rights?
No. The Equality Act is one of the most egregious pieces of legislation ever proposed. And I know you know that, Jody. You voted against this when Nancy Pelosi brought
it.
When she brought it to the House of Representatives several cycles in a row. What the Equality Act does is it elevates the contested category of gender ideology to the same level as race and religion. One of my favorite things to point out, the Equality Act actually, is that it specifically exempts itself from the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which Congress passed and President Clinton signed into law in 1993. And so what that means, Jody, is whenever a claim of, again, very contested categories of gender ideology and sexual orientation, whenever those come into conflict with religious beliefs or religious doctrine, guess what? The gender ideology claim will trump. It'll win. And so this is just massively problematic for Christian colleges and universities. Anyone that retains orthodox belief in human sexuality, because, again, those claims of gender ideology are always going to win if the Equality Act came into law. And I would just briefly add, this has implications for things like girls' safety, girls' sports, women's equality, because again, gender identity, just the idea that someone thinks they're the opposite gender than what they were born, well, those claims would receive preference in our law. And again, it would consign Orthodox, Bible-believing, gospel-believing Christians to a true second-class status in this country. And so the president didn't linger long on it. He spent way much more time on the culture of death and abortion, even chastising the Supreme Court and quoting to them in their face, which I found appalling, the Dobbs decision. But I think it is helpful to note, Jody, that he did go out of his way to highlight his support for, again, one of the most radical pieces of legislation ever proposed in this country, which is the Equality Act.
Yeah, it really is. And to watch the First Amendment literally being tossed out the window and religious liberties and those who believe certain biblical truths, you're trumped now with the all of that is tossed away for the sake of the Equality Act. It's just incredible. Well, the president also invoked a battle for the soul of the nation. I'd like to get your reaction to this. Play clip six, please.
When you get to be my age, certain things become clearer than ever. I know the American story. Again and again, I've seen the contest between competing forces and the battle for the soul of our nation. Between those who want to pull America back to the past and those who want to move America to the future.
All right, the battle for the soul of America, I would say that battle is much more involved than a battle for those who want to pull America back to the past versus those who want to pull it to the future, which that in itself is totally erroneous to even deal with it from that perspective. But give me your reaction, this whole battle for the soul of America.
Well, Jody, I agree with President Biden that there is a raging battle right now for the soul of this nation. I would just disagree with probably almost every one of his prescriptions. Again, what we saw last night, I think is so helpful with the State of the Union, although it really was just a campaign speech. It laid out his vision. It laid out the president's priorities. It laid out his worldview. It laid out for the whole nation to see what President Biden and his party believes is right and wrong, what should be morally permissible and what should be morally prohibited. It laid it out black and white, very clear, Jody. And again, for Bible-believing Christians, I think we'll find ourselves at odds with almost every policy prescription that the president laid out, which, again, I say this every two and every four years, that elections have consequences. And that is so true, because really the soul for this nation is at stake. But as we approach election time, as believers, we need to be making sure we're taking every thought captive to the Lord, looking at what His Word says. And I think we'll find as we do that, Jody, what we find in Scripture really does contradict a lot of the things that we heard from the House of Representatives last night.
Well, it certainly does. David Clawson, I want to thank you so much. This is such valuable information, and I thank you for coming more and more on Washington Watch on our Friday programs to try to break down some of the important news that takes place during the week and to bring a biblical perspective and a biblical worldview into the whole dynamic of what's being discussed. And, of course, today doing so with the State of the Union address, but I look forward to having you on more and more on Fridays to break this down from a biblical worldview perspective. David Clawson, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Always a joy. Thank you so much, sir.
All right, friends, that's going to wrap up this edition of Washington Watch. I want to thank you not only for joining us today, but this week, as so much is taking place in the news. I want to encourage as I go, Psalm 37, go back and read this. It tells us not to fret about evildoers and don't be envious of those who work evil doing, because the truth is they will be cut down like grass at the end of it all. So we keep our hope, our confidence, our trust in the Lord. That's what we're going to do. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week right here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-866-866-866.
1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.